Welcome back to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan FM. Jay Binkley, Rob Brenton producing the operation. And in studio with us from the Kansas City Chiefs. You might have seen him last night on the broadcast. He was at the drum deck, and in Jacksonville, he was in the pool, Matt McMullen.
Lots of shenanigans in the preseason this year. Just sending me all over the place.
Do people pay much attention to the game in the pool? I know it was a preseason game, but in Jacksonville, I mean, what?
No. No, they don't. Okay. That's the short answer, especially a preseason game.
What do they charge for season tickets in the pool?
That's a good question. It was also a billion degrees there. I wouldn't recommend going to Jacksonville in August.
No.
Just the humidity and the heat was miserable. So I understand why you'd want to get in the pool if you were at a preseason game in Jacksonville, but not a lot of intent football watching going on up there.
What did you learn from the preseason, Matt? And, you know, I mean, you talk about the receivers and the development. Clearly, I want to get into a discussion, you know, about guys taking a step forward on defense. Obviously, saw the emergence of Carson Steele. He of the Crocky J alligator. He's got as a pet, which is awesome. And development and Carson Wentz, of course, be the backup quarterback. But what did you learn as a whole throughout this preseason?
Well, really, the preseason is important. It's an opportunity for guys to go out there and play. But I think you have to take it hand in hand with training camp as well. And I think we learned a lot at training camp in terms of the depth of this team. But then the preseason is an opportunity for those guys to go out and play against another opponent. And in Jacksonville, not everything went well, really, on either side for the second and third team. So what do you learn from that? And I think we saw a lot of good things in the Lions game the next week. And last week's a little bit different because no starters played at all. But the Lions game in particular, specifically the first half, I think we saw a lot of good things from the starters for sure, but also from that second unit. And that second unit will be important over the course of the year because you never know what's going to happen in terms of injuries and things like that. So I'm encouraged about the depth of this team. Still work to do, still not 100% there. There's another week and a half of training camp at the team facility before things really get going. But I feel good about the starters for one thing, but also some key depth pieces as well.
Yeah, we'll get into, you know, is the roster better because Mitch Holtis, you know, thinks it is because I played that. But
And I agree with him.
You agree. We'll talk about that. But another thing we saw, the difference this year was the NFL rules, the landing zone with the kickoff and how in the fourth quarter you can't do an onside unless you announce it. Say, to me, that takes away the strategy because I love a team that comes out the second half and will see something on film and, you know, the game of chess and will kick the onside and take it by surprise. But then the Hardman deal, because we were all confused with that, what had happened in Jacksonville. But now there's the talk, and Dave Tobe the other day when he talked doesn't think they'll make that change, but said they could, where the NFL could give you the ball at the 35 instead of the 30, because I think a lot of teams are saying, hey, we'll just kick it to the end zone. You can have it 30 because the average returns bring it to 27, 28, 29 anyway, so it doesn't really matter. My opinion was, listen, I understand the 35 because you want to get more returns, but you don't change the rules in the middle of the game. And I understand the regular season hasn't started, but to me, preseason and training camp is when the game starts because that's when you start preparing for, is it going to be the 30 or the 35? I wouldn't change it. What do you think when you see it? Because you've seen it firsthand around the sidelines.
Yeah, I think the preseason was a great testing ground for it because that play against the Jaguars in particular, what would have happened if that was in a regular season game?
Oh,
like mass confusion, totally. People would have been really mad. I'm kind of glad it happened because then the league can kind of work through some things. I've been studying this for months and had never considered that exact scenario. How often
does the ball? I don't think any of us did. Now, we all looked at it and stuff, but I mean, traditionalist, whatever, I'm okay with that if you want to increase kickoffs. Of course, I want to see that. I don't like changing things up, and I don't like, you know, putting your kicker at risk to make, you know, more tackles, which they have to do. I don't like that theory on it. And I was to the point to just kick it to the end zone and give them to it to the 30. The 35 makes you think a little bit differently, but the 30, I have no problem with it.
It's going to be a matter of how teams can cover it. And if you feel really good about your coverage unit and your kicker and your strategy, maybe you'll keep trying it where you're kicking it in the landing zone. But you're right. If you get burned by it a bunch of times or one thing that Coach Tobias talked about, if you're trying to get out of a game, I always think about the 13 seconds game because the Bills kicked a touchback in that game. Well, what if they had to kick the dynamic kickoff? What would have happened in that game? I don't know. It kind of changes everything.
It does.
So I do think that some teams over the course of the year, if they keep it at the 30, if they just have all kinds of trouble covering it, maybe they will just cut their losses and kick the touchback. But I don't think Dave Tobe will be that guy. I think Coach Tobe sees the advantage and maybe taking advantage of the situation. We have Harrison Butker. We have a coverage unit we believe in. Let's try to pin these guys back. I'm curious to see how it goes against the Ravens, but across the league, I think you're right that if it remains at the 30, there's a possibility some teams might say, we'll just kick it out the back of the end zone.
Hey, you don't want to get your kicker hurt. And I always thought in the beginning when it first came out, I was like, you know, just expand the roster. And I know that you can add the two guys three times a year from the practice squad to the regular roster. I think it's three times. We can take them off the practice squad and put them on the regular. I think you can do that.
Three elevations, yeah.
But 54 men instead of 53. I thought, you know, not Justin Reed because he can clearly play defense, but a guy, you know, that caliber from the combine that can kick and tackle as well. There, to me, there's a value. Even like a Luis Reese-Amet that, hey, you just keep him on your roster because he can kick off and he can cover. Because to me, if you're going to change the rules, might as well expand the roster by one, two, so that way your kicker's not expanded because the kicker is such a big part of the game. Whether you like kickers or not, they're a huge part of the game. Butker is huge for the Kansas City Chiefs.
And it goes beyond just the kicker, too, because in the past, the Chiefs were only kicking touchbacks. It really doesn't matter who's on your kickoff team in terms of coverage, but now it does. If you're kicking it in the landing zone every time, could impact what decisions are made over the next few days. Maybe a 100%. Player that wouldn't have made it originally on special teams is now going to be on the roster because of what he does on kickoff coverage. So there's a lot that goes into
returning.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's totally different. Even the profile of what your returner was going to be like is totally different. And you have two guys back there. One of them is a designated blocker, essentially. Can you also block in addition to catching the ball on occasion? Those players aren't everywhere, and maybe that player doesn't make the team last year, but this year, because of the rules, maybe he makes it.
I think you're going to see a lot more trick plays, too, reverses, things like that.
A lot of fun stuff,
when we get
sure.
to the regular season. Did you see you were every day at training camp, of course, because you're up there every day of every training camp.
23 practices.
Since you've been here, you're always up there and you watch everything. You and Mitch Holtis do a great job, you know, covering it afterwards and covering it during. Do you think, my old theory is, Andy Reid's one of two coaches that doesn't scrimmage another team. And what we've seen from this is not a lot of production, a lot of fights go on and everything else between the two teams. Like, I understand that. I get it. And to me, when you're playing against the number two defense every day in practice, and defensively you're looking at Patrick Mahomes on offense, you're getting a much better workout at practices than you are playing somebody's second and third teams that aren't even running their regular scheme.
I'm 100% on board with not doing the joint practices. I love how Coach Reed does it because every day is so perfectly engineered and designed and planned. You have sessions where it's the first team offense against the first team defense. That happens quite a bit in camp with 11-on-11 football. But there's also these things called 10-10-10 practices that maybe if you go up to camp and they're not in pads, you're wondering what they're doing. It'll be the first team offense against like the third team defense. And it's all about executing what success looks like, things like that. If you're just facing the first team defense, maybe you don't have the scheme executed perfectly every single time. But what does it look like against the third team defense? Okay, this is what success looks like. Now let's go execute it against the first team defense. That all sounds kind of complicated, but I think all these little things combine and build on themselves to help make a championship team. And you just don't get that if you're doing a joint practice. Like I get it, the joint practice, you're facing a different opponent. We get that in the preseason. Yeah. I don't necessarily need that in St. Joe.
And with preseason, you know, guys aren't running plays because these guys end up at all sorts of different teams. They're not going to give you their.
There's no game planning.
They're
going
not going to give you their inside secrets to a certain point because of that. As far as Buck or someone's talking about Harrison, but here's the thing: he had to get used to a new stamper, and that's huge because Winchester got hurt, and Kelsey was already out of the game because Kelsey's the emergency snapper. They went Noah Gray, and he did a great job.
First time in his life doing that.
But having a different snapper does make a huge difference as far as timing with any kind of kickers. I'm sorry, that makes a huge difference.
The whole battery between the long snapper, the holder, and the kicker is so important.
Getting used to them.
If people wonder what do those guys do during training camp and during practice, they're just working together nonstop. And if you take one part out of that, I think Plattner did a pretty good job overall.
Sure.
Kansas City kid, pretty cool playing.
Park Hill South.
Here in Kansas City. Yeah, that was awesome.
I think Park Hill South, yeah.
Yeah, but from this area, went to K-State, got to play for the Chiefs for a day. Yeah. So cool. But if you take James Winchester out of it, that kind of throws everything off, and it's tough to really evaluate.
He's one of the guys, a few guys that's been here before Mahomes.
Yeah, 2015, I believe. Just amazing. You know what's funny, too, is if you look at the most playoff games played in Chiefs history, James Winchester is right up there.
Yeah, it's right there. James Winchester has been just the rock. Special teams purposes, we'll get into the offense here in defense in just a minute, but Ariza, I remember, covering him in college, when we were joking around a little bit, but because we did the Heisman list every week and stuff like this. But, at one point I had him in the top five for the Heisman. People naturally were doing it because he was so damn good. Like, the guy was the punt god is what they called him at San Diego State, but being left-footed, having him, that's certainly a weapon for the Chiefs. Butker's as good as it gets, but in Winchester, of course, but that special teams battery is pretty damn good.
The left-footed nature of it is kind of a big deal, and I know it's kind of a nerdy aspect, but that the ball rotates a different way, and if you're a returner, most people are right-footed, and you don't see it rotating the other way like it does with Matt Araiza. It confuses you a little bit, and it's kind of like what we have with Dustin Colquitt for years and years. He was also a left-footed punter. I think Araiza is going to have a really nice year. Just an incredible leg. I mean, just a bazooka, right? And you never want to punt, but to have a weapon like that, if you're backed up, that can flip the field, that's a big deal.
It's a huge, huge difference. We'll take a timeout here. Matt McMullen from the Kansas City Chiefs in studio with us. I want to talk about, the rookies. I know, obviously, I have you in during the draft. How do they look at training camp this year? Because I'm curious, because I think some of them I kind of like. We'll talk about that next.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back to The Drive. Jay Binkley, Rob Brent, Matt McMullen from the Kansas City Chiefs in studio. What do you think of this new 96.5 studio we got?
I was just going to ask you about that. Are you used to it yet, the whole 96.5 thing?
And the 610 banner's gone, so it looks same studio, same place, same direction, just different signal.
You need new signage in here, don't you?
I think they're working on that.
Okay. The one tricky thing, so I have a bit of an older car. I don't have like the fancy like Apple CarPlay or anything.
Yeah.
I just have the old, like I have stations like programmed in.
You actually have an AM radio.
I do.
Yeah, awesome. It's been
programmed this way since like college, and I'm trying to figure out how to change it. I can't figure out how to change it. So I have to manually do it.
It still works. It's still, on there too. So.
But the crystal clear audio, yeah, FM, you got to do it.
And now with the HD cars, you can get it in HD radio, HD2, 106.5. You can do it on that.
Come a long way.
That too. Something I sent you earlier, now we talked about it yesterday, was Andy Reid's been head coach in the National Football League for 25 years, if you can believe it. This will be year 26.
Yep.
As a head coach, which that's a long time in this profession. He's made the AFC or NFC title game 11 times, 5 in Philly, 6 in Kansas City. That includes stretches of 4, obviously, in Philadelphia and here. That's 11 times in 25 years.
It's unbelievable.
Doing the math, that's 44%. Of the seasons he's been a head coach, he's been in a title game. And you think about some of these other teams, they think it's huge, and they take a snap, and let's throw a parade when they make the title game. 44% of the time, and keep in mind, it took him a while in Kansas City until Mahomes got here, but all those times in Philadelphia bulked up that number.
It's the standard for Coach Reid. And the thing that's so amazing about him is his adaptability. I've mentioned this before. I did some more research on it after you texted me this, because I had this thought about how he's changed so much over the years. Because I think some coaches, because he's an offensive genius, right? But some coaches have their system, and they put it in place, and they're just going to stick to that. This is my system. This works forever. Mm-hmm. Well, Coach Reid is a master of adapting over time. So listen to this. Here's an example. During his first 5 years in Philadelphia, the Eagles ran 4,916 offensive plays, okay? 29 of those took place in the shotgun.
Really?
That is 0.6%. Just last year alone, the Chiefs ran 869 snaps out of the shotgun. It's just amazing. I mean, his ability to adapt over time, completely change his scheme, everything that he does. And every year, as you said, just about every other year in his career, he's in the conference title game. It's amazing.
Well, I just remember when he brought in Chris Ault. Remember when the pistol offense was really popular?
Yeah.
And he was one of the architects of the pistol offense. They brought him in as a consultant just to kind of, for Alex Smith, because he obviously the perfect quarterback to have, in that pistol type offense. And then the next year he came as like an exclusive consultant with the team. But you've always heard, and Brett Veach has mentioned it before when he was gone on with Pat McAfee or whatever, that, Andy Reid talking about how much he watches the college game and what teams are doing. And I remember Gary Patterson was at TCU saying he was watching the Chiefs to get ready for Texas Tech that night because of Patrick Mahomes. Like, he runs a lot of what happened to Texas Tech because he realized, all right, this is what made him special. Why are we going to change it? Why do we want to change it? Because that was the big problem with spread quarterbacks, I think, that came out of college to the NFL. They had to adapt to, can he get under center? Can he get under center? Like, Sam Bradford's one of those. Can he get under center and take the snap? just have them do what they did in college and made them so successful. And I think that's what Andy Reid does.
It's crazy thinking back to those days of, he's never ran a pro-style offense.
Yeah, he's got to get under center.
Now pro-style offense, like I just said, I mean, the Chiefs ran like 200 snaps under center last year, and almost all of those are in short yardage or goal line. It's not just your standard offense. It's amazing how it's changed. And Coach Reid is one of the main reasons it has changed, because he realized a player like Patrick Mahomes, for example, what does he do best? How can I best maximize his skills? It's not putting him under center every single snap just because that's how it's been done for 100 years. And I don't know why other coaches didn't think about this or realize it, but it's pretty cool what happened here in Kansas City.
I remember when Washington first had RG3 and they tried to implement some of the things that made him good at Baylor. And I thought, okay, this is pretty smart. It's pretty smart that they're doing this, because you want guys to be in that comfortability they had in college. In the college game, it used to be they knocked off everything from the NFL. There's a lot of NFL taking college stuff too. And we kind of saw it, you know, with what went on in Arkansas, you know, with Miami doing it, the Wild Hog and everything else. But it's copycat league, as we know. So Rob and I were talking about, and then I played that Mitch Holtus talking about, you know, first of all, the most important thing is you don't have that 6 weeks where you have less rest than your opponent. That was pretty big for the Chiefs last year, especially since we're talking about a team at that point that it had either gone to the AFC title game or the Super Bowl in five straight years, been six now, but they've had less rest than anybody. At least the core has had less rest. Yeah, there's rookies that come in and stuff, but that was huge. And they don't have that this year. And
big deal.
And, of course, these rookies that come in, and we'll get to those. And I know Snead's gone, but I looked at the development of Chanel, and I look at the 10.5 sacks of Carl Loftus, and I think we're only scratching the surface of how good he's going to be. I love the addition of Jaden Hicks on that defense.
Oh, yeah.
Xavier Worthy on the offense gives you something different. I know Hollywood Brown's banged up now and be back in a couple of weeks. Is this team, do you feel better about this team than last year? And last year's team, Super Bowl champions. But I mean, we're really split the atom here.
Yes, I do. And they have to go out there and play. But based on what I saw in training camp, and really dating back to OTAs, the entire summer offseason training program, I believe right now that this is the best offense and defense combination that we've had in the Patrick Mahomes era. And that's exciting stuff, considering they've won three Super Bowls in 5 years and are going for the third in a row. Why do I think that? Well, the defense was the number two scoring defense in the NFL last year. Yes, L.J. Snead is no longer here. But if you look at the rest of the defensive roster, it's not like it's pieced together with a bunch of veterans from other teams and they all came together and had a great year. It is young ascending players, players that are all under 25, who I don't think are even in their prime yet. That's exciting. I think George Karlaftis is going to be better this year than he was last year. I feel the same way about Leo Chanel. Brian Cook is back. I think people might forget that Brian Cook missed the last quarter of the season last year. He's back. He's a starter on this team. I could go on. Trent McDuffie is a superstar in this league, on the verge of having a huge season. So when you have young players that are ascending, and also Chris Jones is back. We don't really talk about...
It's the biggest free signing.
Exactly.
You're talking about. Well, it was their own guy, but he was still the biggest free agent signing.
It's... Just because it's a re-signing doesn't mean it's not the biggest
signing
of the offseason. You bring back a future Hall of Famer, one of the greatest defensive players in the league, the anchor of this whole defense, the engine that makes it go. It's just really exciting. So I think the defense is going to be really, really good once again. Kind of their rallying cry and their mantra throughout camp has been D-bet, means demand better. And on the first day of training camp, Steve Spagnuolo, who's been doing this a long time, showed the entire defense a story on the projector about how in his days with the Giants, 1 year he had a top-ranked defense. The next year they fell to 31 overall. And he said, we're not letting that happen here. And the players have embraced that mentality. And if you're already thinking about that, saying we're not riding on what happened last year, that's a big deal because they have the talent to do it. So the defense will be really good, I think. And the offense, if you just watch a day of training camp, you can see why it's going to be exciting, particularly when Hollywood Brown is back. Their ability to stretch the field is a big deal. But also just the underneath stuff, the reliability and the consistency of Hollywood Brown when he is healthy stood out to me throughout training camp. And Xavier Worthy adds a whole new element as well. So I just think the combination is something that Chiefs fans should be excited about.
Tech Sign was asking me about never been coach of the year. That's not true. He's won it once. Matt Nagy's won it once. Kevin Stefanski of Cleveland has won it twice. So I'm just saying Andy Reid's number two all time in postseason wins, only five behind Belichick. He's number four all time in wins, one coach of the year. So
and that's ridiculous.
The coach of the year doesn't matter. Because it means you have to be bad and then good, and he's not bad.
Exactly.
Bad.
That's the thing. I have some numbers on that because it's remarkable. The Chiefs have had 11 consecutive winning seasons. I think we're just used to it now here in Kansas City, but we can't take it for granted because it's the fifth longest streak in the Super Bowl era of consecutive winning seasons. 8 straight AFC West titles, 9 straight seasons with double-digit wins. That doesn't happen, and this is a league that's set up for parity. Mm-hmm. It's designed so the Bears, for example, can have the number one overall pick and then be good the next year.
Spend the same amount of money as everybody.
And that's exciting, but the Chiefs have found a way to be good every single year. It blows my mind that the Coach of the Year award is only designed for a team that's bad and is good the next year. Isn't sustainability the hardest thing to do?
Or just kind of maybe wait till the end of the year and let's see how this thing plays out. Because like a D'Amico Ryans, you know, he beat Stefanski bad in the first round of the playoffs and turned that team around. I mean, turned Houston around.
Sure.
I mean, you know, the team was turned around 100%. All right, some of these rookies, see if they've caught your eye or not. We talked a lot about the rookies before they even drafted by the Chiefs, and we took a look at all of them. We looked at the offensive line heavily, and we looked at probably receivers more than anything when I had you in studio when you were with Character Concerns.
Which was so much fun, by the way, and I can't wait for next year.
I can't wait either, but let's start with, I guess, the first pick, Xavier Worthy, talking about an extremely cerebral guy, a guy that at the combine it was not only diagramming what he was going to do, but how the protection was going to work too, which is different than a lot of guys don't do. Former academic All-Big 12, has that 4.21 speed, and again, I'm linking to the Chiefs before we knew the 4.21. We knew he's fast, but he's been a playmaker in Texas, consistent, led that team in receptions the last 3 years.
I remember us talking about this, that we both kind of were in on Xavier Worthy before he ran the 4.21. And when he ran the 4.21, that was great. But at the same time, it's like, okay, we can't really talk about him anymore because it makes it look like we're just talking about him because he's really fast. He's
so much more than that.
Yeah, but he's so much more than that. And that was the bummer with the 40 time, in that he got grouped in with just the track stars.
He got lumped into a combine hero, and that's not who he is.
He's so much more than that. And that's kind of what I gathered immediately after the Chiefs drafted him, that the Chiefs believed he could be a guy who could come in and help right away in a variety of areas, that he just loves football, he loves to practice, and he wants to be a complete receiver. Not just the go route guy. He can do the go route better than just about anyone.
He can play the sliding, play X too at his size.
But exactly, at 165 pounds, he can play the X, which is a big deal. Yeah, he can play outside. And we saw in that Lions game, if you are a safety and you are flat footed against him, we saw this with Tyreek Hill for years, you're in huge trouble because he's going to run right by you. And we saw that with a couple of big plays against the Lions. So he's going to help this team in a variety of ways. I think he's going to reintroduce the deep passing game, which the Chiefs admittedly needed last year and were missing last year. But it's more than that. It's also stuff within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and also behind the line of scrimmage.
And he did a great job at Texas with catching the football. Kingsley Suamatia. We'll have more snaps than anybody. Xavier's going to have a lot with Hollywood Brown, you know, out the first couple of weeks, but Kingsley is going to lead all rookies in snaps. I mean, just is. How good is this guy to you? Because I've just seen him continue to develop. Now, you're going to face your lumps in the beginning, but how fast he gets out in the flats on screens and things, I've seen plays where he's taken out corners. Dude is very athletic for how big he is.
Athletic is the perfect word for him. I'm really excited about Kingsley, and it's funny because we were talking about Kingsley a lot when we were doing the Character Concerns podcast, and now here he is, a Chief, and the season's almost here. I'm excited about him because I've seen him grow over time, and that's one of the things the nerd in me, the football nerd, loves about the offseason, because I'm watching these OTA practices. When they're not in pads, it's very light, but they're still working on the cerebral aspect of it all. I've seen him grow so much from OTAs in May to where we are now. And that's the hope with any rookie, particularly an offensive lineman. And when the pads came on in training camp, that's when you can really start learning about these guys. And he got better every single day. And I think it's a good thing that he wasn't just given the job when he was drafted. He had to earn that job and win that job and battle Wanye Morris. And to his credit, he did well enough to be where he is now. He's a rookie. He's 21 years old, not going to be 22 until January. Yeah. He'll play almost the whole season at 21, so he's very young. But he's potential through the roof. And I think, in my opinion, he's ahead of schedule of where I thought maybe he would be at this point. So that's exciting. Got to go out there and play games, and it's a tough assignment against the Ravens and Bengals to start out. But I feel really good about where Kingsley's at. He's only going to get better. And that's an exciting prospect to have a 21-year-old left tackle who's only going to get better in his career protecting Patrick Mahomes for years to come.
This team is so young. Matter of fact, Xavier Worthy, when he was drafted,
it's his birthday
is April 27th.
Yeah.
Like, not able to go to the bar and buy a beer legally. You know what I'm saying? That's how young this team is. He's just 21 years old, which is absolutely insane. But I remember Bill Snyder a few years ago when he was coaching at Kansas State still, and he had his whole offensive line returning, and he was asked the question, hey, you must feel great about having your same offensive line return. He goes, well, it's not how I look at it. He goes, I like competition.
Sure.
You know, I want guys to push other guys. I don't want guys being just content that they're the starter. I want them to be pushed by somebody else. And that was kind of, you know, the mantra a little bit with Kingsley coming in here. And it's like, looked at the Royals at 11 and 12. And I think there were some training wheels that were with the players that were getting called up and, you know, not ready for primetime. You learn your lumps now in Major League Baseball. It's Chiefs, they expect you to be good when you're drafted. And that's what you want, because this way the Patriots have been when they're dynasty. It's how the Steelers, you know, have always been. There's no time, really. You got to play. This team's going for a three-peat, right? You're walking in the locker room with Chris Jones and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. It's go time the minute you're drafted, and I think they realize it, especially these guys that we just talked about.
Brett Veach often talks about in the offseason that his job is to create competition at virtually every position. It's not just building a great starting offense and starting defense. It's creating competition to get the best out of everyone. And we're also so lucky that we have Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes, because those guys could just show up on the first day of the season and be like, all right, here we are. But they don't. They're like the most competitive guys on planet Earth. So if you have two future Hall of Famers, two future first ballot Hall of Famers, and they're the most competitive guys on the planet, what does that say to everyone else on the roster? You have to compete for your spot. You have to earn your spot.
I mean, if they're out there busting.
Exactly. You know, in May.
Yeah.
And even if we're back-to-back champions, doesn't matter. Everyone's
out there flexing when Carson Steele's doing his stuff.
I love supporting it.
Your teammates. By the way, he's a Texas Tech that I showed him getting off the plane, because remember they're doing that walkthrough area named after him?
Uh-huh.
Because he donated that money to Texas Tech. They're naming the quarterback room and the offensive coordinator room, the Patrick Mahomes room, I guess.
That's pretty cool.
At Texas Tech. We'll take a timeout. Matt McMullen with the Kansas City Chiefs in studio. Couple more guys from the draft before we start looking at maybe some undrafted guys like a Carson Steele that's really turning some heads with the Chiefs.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back. To the Drive, Jay Binkley, Rob Britton producing the operation. Matt McMullen from the Kansas City Chiefs in studio. We're talking Kansas City Chiefs. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of them today. We're going to talk about the Kansas City Royals as well. Josh Fournier joins us next hour, but obviously the Chiefs just wrapping up preseason. From the 816, hey, Jay, are you going to talk about the 2025 draft at all?
Let's do it.
Yes. But not here if I want to keep my job. Because there's a Character Concerns podcast we have, which is this is what it's all about. The draft, which, by the way, you can go download that if you want to, wherever you get your podcast. And it's on the website as well. I almost said 610's website, 96.5. It's either one that you want to go to. It'll both take you to the same place. But we'll talk about the draft. And, man, we have college football tomorrow, man.
Isn't that crazy?
Ireland,
it's here.
Because K-State's an Ireland game next year. But, College Game Day and Saban, all those guys are over in Ireland. McAfee's doing a show over there. We got 11 a.m. Florida State going against Georgia Tech. Week zero college football. Then the following week, you know, you got some college football on Thursdays. We got it on the weekend. And then all of a sudden the next week you got the NFL after you get the three-day weekend of Labor Day. Are you kidding me, man? Pinch me, because we ain't looking back. It's all on now. We have football every weekend until February.
We made it. I love the Super Bowl, obviously. I love the Super Bowl and the Chiefs are in it. But there is a reality that comes over me after the Super Bowl is over that's like, we have no football now for months and months and months. Mm-hmm. And now that it's finally back, even just things like on a Thursday night, I'll watch whoever's playing. I just need football in my life again. I'm so glad it's finally back.
It's beauty's in the eye of the beholder when they watch preseason games, because I enjoy watching it to see some of the rookies that we talked about so much, not just with the Chiefs, with other teams too. Like, I like, you know, like Ben Sennett, I like watching him with Washington, like how he's doing. I like watching some of these guys that you really liked and said, you know, you start watching in other games. I know that's geeky and you probably don't do it, but
I do.
I don't have a life. That's what I do. So anyway, let's look at the Chiefs too, because I loved what the Chiefs did in the fourth round.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be contributors to this team. Maybe not starters right away, but Jaden Hicks. Dane Brugler had him as the number 39 overall player. Obviously, Dane Brugler knows a lot about the NFL draft. A lot of people had him as the best safety. Safeties did not get drafted early as we thought. So Jaden Hicks, probably the year before, probably was in the second round, to be honest with you. They get him in the fourth. He's one of the leading tacklers each and every week so far in the preseason. And then you get Jared Wiley from TCU. And we had his head coach on, Sonny Dykes from TCU. And he was talking about how a lot of guys will leave, you know, the field of play and they'll come back and tell him, hey, coach, I'm open, or hey, do this. And he's just like, yeah. But then he said when Wiley would do it, he'd go back and watch the film, whatever, and he was right. He said so when Wiley would come back and tell him something, he would do it because Wiley's got that, you know, that football brain. He's always thinking. It's why he led college football in red zone scores.
And a former quarterback, too, in high school. Has a quarterback
mind.
And he's
like that. And he could block. And he Wiley's a different guy, man. He's like, this guy can catch the ball. He can do a lot of different things. He's a special player. But, again, you look at Veach's draft, and it's guys that know football. And they look for weaknesses. And they understand where they're at. But fourth round, I loved.
I did too. Just great value. I'm glad you brought up Dane Brugler because his draft guide is kind of my favorite one out there.
The Beast?
Yeah, The Beast. It's incredible. If you are listening and you're a draft nerd, get The Beast every single offseason.
Beast is good.
You'll learn so much. I referenced like the 2021 draft guide of his when there's players that are out there on the waiver wire or something. His research is incredible. Whenever I come on your show, I have to be fully prepared, and I bring it along with me, like on my computer. And
hey, you bring it, man.
You bring up people. I'm like, I've never heard of this person. I Google him and Dane Brugler. No, you do an amazing job with it, but Brugler is incredible. And the fact that he had Jaden Hicks as his number 39 overall player, his number one safety, and the Chiefs got him in the fourth round at, I think, pick 132 or somewhere around there, is amazing. And going into the draft, I don't think safety was necessarily an area of need.
133, so yeah.
Ah, so close.
But 131 was Wiley. I mean, they're real okay. Close together, right?
Okay, right there.
Remember that? Boom, boom.
Yep. And two great picks, I think, at this point. But I didn't think safety was a huge area of need. But what's great about Brett Veach is he embraces kind of the best player available mantra. And if a player like Jaden Hicks is available in the fourth round, you think the value is great, why not? And you add him to this defense. And we've seen through the preseason, besides maybe Carson Steele, I think Jaden Hicks was the star of the preseason.
I think he was too. In Spags being a previous defensive backs coach, you think about the versatility. Shamari Connor was my favorite pick 2 years ago just because I liked what he did in college. And I loved he can get to the quarterback, he can play safety, he can play nickel, can do so many different things for you.
Yeah.
Well, Jaden Hicks that way too. And it comes to the Spags system or Spagnuolo. You think 2 years ago people were worried about the pass rush. They ended up with 55 sacks, number two in the NFL. Last year, they even got better because they went to 57 sacks, number two in the NFL. The team record is 60. That's how close that they are. It was 1990. That's how close they are to that record. It's guys like Trent McDuffie that ended up with 3 sacks last year. It's rushing these defensive backs. It's kind of who and what they are. And a lot of the guys they draft, you got to think of Spags and what type of guys he likes on who they draft, because a lot of it, they're guys that kind of fit into what he wants.
So last year, Trent McDuffie led all corners and quarterback pressures. You know who led all corners and quarterback pressures the year before? Legarius Sneed.
Oh, Sneed.
It's amazing. And whoever's in there this year, maybe Shamari Connor, maybe a rotation of guys, I have a feeling if it's one player or a group, those guys will lead all corners in quarterback pressures because Spags is so good at dialing up pressure from various spots. I think he's the best defensive coordinator in NFL history. And I know sometimes if you say that someone who's currently doing it is the best, it might sound like a prisoner of the moment situation. No coordinator, offensive or defensive, has more rings than Steve Spagnuolo.
I mean, he beat the undefeated Patriots.
He beat the 07 Patriots. He's been a part of 3 Super Bowls now in 5 years in Kansas City. And orchestrated one of the best defensive performances in the postseason ever this past year, facing all these great offenses and holding them below their average every single week. I mean, he's remarkable. And I think we've gotten to a point now where we have all these young players here that are versatile, like you said, that he can truly execute his vision the way he wants. And that's exciting stuff.
He's kind of on the same page with Andy Reid. I think they kind of look at a lot of the same guys. They really stand out to them. But you mentioned how good this team was against scoring offenses and scoring defenses. Defense, Spags deserves a lot of credit for how he made this defense. People really didn't pay attention to it early on because it was good early on. It never wavered. It was good from the start of the season on.
Whole year.
And they started talking about it more, and I was like, okay, who'd they face in the playoffs? How about the number two, the number three, the number four, and the number six scoring offenses in the NFL? Not at home, either on the road or on neutral sites. And the Chiefs offense, which, you know, had its lumps at times. They faced the number one, three, and four scoring defenses in the NFL. That was Baltimore, Frisco at three, Buffalo at four. All those teams on the road or neutral facility. And the only reason they didn't play two, it was the Kansas City Chiefs.
Exactly.
So that was the big deal there. All right, I just want to get your initial reaction when you hear your broadcast partner and a guy you know very well, Mitch Holthus, do this.
And he breaks into the secondary again. 15 angles, 10, 5, and drags a bear down inside the 5. They say touchdown, Kansas City. He took his alligator in there. What a run, 32-yard left angle run by Carson Steele.
It wasn't a touchdown, although I thought it was.
I thought it was, too.
I thought it was. And some of the reviews, I was like, man, come on. It's preseason Chicago. Everflus is doing these reviews. It's like, okay. I would have given him that one. And then, of course, he punched it right in, which I think is great because I'm thinking third and one and fourth and one in an area where this team has wanted to get better. And I look at Carson Steele as a guy that they trust doing that. I mean, he's a pile mover. He really is. And when you want a guy that can get those yards with those, you know, the strong legs and get you that extra yard and follow the blockers, because he's really shown the ability to do that. I think a third and one and fourth and one is being so important when I think about Carson Steele and his pet alligator, Crocky J.
I was up on the GEHA drum deck when those plays were happening. Yeah. So I was watching it from like a million miles up, but it was a nice angle because I was in the opposite end zone and seeing it all happen. It was like,
it's amazing how much better it's like watching stuff up there is. It's actually
live all 22. Nice. Yeah, no, it was great. But Carson Steele is a great story. It's a really good example of how it doesn't matter where you came from or where you were drafted. If you were drafted, how you got here, if you can go out there and play, you're going to have an opportunity. We'll see what happens over the next few days, but he has certainly put his best foot forward. Every year when we get our undrafted free agent signees, I know you do this too, I comb through them, and I always wonder, who's the person that's going to make a play for us in like week 9? And no one knew who he was until that day. But if you were paying attention in the offseason and were following these undrafted free agents that were fighting for that last roster spot.
I kind of like Damani Bailey, you know, in those terms. I know he hadn't really got as much of a chance, but I see a practice squad guy. But I feel the way, I felt that way about Carson.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look at Carson a couple years ago at Ball State.
Well, I'm a Mac guy, and he led the Mac in rushing.
Video game numbers.
He's not your typical fullback that ran for 130 yards in his career in college.
Yeah.
No, 1,500 yards. You know, rushing at Ball State, goes to UCLA and was crazy good in their backfield. Running backs don't get drafted, man.
No.
They don't. And, you know, they just don't as much. Some of them do, some don't. But getting the guy in the seventh round or undrafted, and you wonder where Pacheco was almost not drafted.
But here's the cool thing about Steele. As good as he was against Jacksonville, Coach Reed, that whole week going into the Lions game, said that was good. But if he's going to make this team, he has to earn it and prove it on special teams. In the last 2 weeks, he's gotten a lot of opportunities on special teams, and you just hear his name over and over again. He's recovered fumbles. I think he had a recovered fumble against the Lions. Returned kicks. He's done a little bit of everything and looked good doing it. So I just really, I'm happy for him. I applaud him for putting the effort forward that he did. It's a cool thing to see a player that does not have anything guaranteed or promised, and they just take advantage of their opportunity. And we've seen that with Carson Steele.
And Jaden Hicks, as you mentioned, you can make an argument he had the best preseason, you know, for a Chief, you know, as far as being a rookie and being out there.
Heard his name over and over again.
Jaden, he was. He looked at six tackles, four tackles. He's always in the top. But special teams, he's a four-phaser. He's on all four phases for Dave Tobe, and that's very important. A couple days ago, he says he's pounding the table for Nico, which, you know, Andy Reid makes the final decision there. But you talk about the coaching staff being great with Spags, and ESPN just, you know, gave this coaching staff clearly the best coaching staff in the league. But Andy Reid, one of the best ever, if not the best current coach. Spagnuolo, and then a guy like Dave Tobe, who got Devin Hester into the Hall of Fame. but that's been very important for Jaden Hicks, and you mentioned Carson Steele. But Carson Steele, to me, is more than a guy you just throw on your roster. I know he's a fullback, and Andy Reid was careful with that term. Like, hey, he runs like a halfback because he was a halfback. That's what he did. And yes, he's bigger size. But, and you got to be careful about getting enamored by guys, but the stiff arm, that's a pro stiff arm. Like, that is. And the way he moves piles, if you watch it, like, that's what they need, third and one, fourth and one. And he's much more than that. He's the type of guy to go third and one and bust it off for 18 yards.
I love the hunger when he runs and players just fall off of him. He broke 96 tackles at Ball State in that crazy year that he had. And I respect his attitude.
Like Tech Mobile, and I'm probably dating myself here, but remember like Kevin Mack?
Exactly.
And Christian Okoye, just Bo Jacks throwing guys off.
You just can't tackle him. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that. But here's the thing with him. He could have gone back to Ball State and had another video game season, but he didn't. He went to UCLA to challenge himself. Still led the Bruins in rushing, had like almost 900 rushing yards. The numbers weren't eye-popping at UCLA, but it was against much better competition. And to me, it says a lot about him as a player and as a person that he wanted to challenge himself. He wasn't content with just having crazy numbers at Ball State and the MAC. He's like, I want to go somewhere where it's harder before I go to the NFL. And you can learn a lot about a player when they choose to do that.
But how cool is it having a guy, and yes, fullback in title, I think it's going to be a lot of halfback too, but as a pet alligator. I mean, is that not just NFL fullback all over it, man? And your name is Steele, Carson Steele, and you got a gator?
Like, it sounds made up. Like, it sounds like it's in the Replacements, like we have a replacement sequel.
Comic group, yeah.
Exactly. But I did some research on this. I think you can have a pet alligator in Missouri. So, if he makes the team.
I have no idea what the rules are.
I think you can.
I wouldn't mind having one. I mean, I think it'd be a nice pet.
Ask Carson about it, I guess. He knows what he's doing.
I would love to take it. You know, I would take an alligator. Nothing wrong with those.
He's out of a movie, and I'm glad he's playing well. I'm glad he's playing well for the Chiefs, and I'm rooting for him. We'll see what happens.
You're on the course doing a lot of stuff with Mitch as well. What, St. Joe?
Yeah.
Do you sit there at the end going, all right, let's just get this thing going? Or are you one of those guys that likes camp? Like Kelsey, hey, man, spring, do you like the whole, you know, routine of getting up and maybe going out in St. Joe later on that night? Or just are you camper? I remember we used to go every single day, and I liked it. I actually liked training camp. But you ever tire of it? Or?
Well, I love camp. Yep. I love being up there. I'm a football nerd. I love watching every single practice and seeing the team get progressively better.
Any interviews you get to do up and down the...
Yeah, it's fun. You know, there's fun stuff. You see a different side of the players, but you also can track the depth chart every day and see how it changes, see how players respond to different situations. You see the team get better. I love watching even OTAs in May because when we get to the very end and you see the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, the first thing I'm thinking of often is July 17th. When it was raining, or the OTA day where it was 110 degrees, but the guys were out there practicing. It's really, you know, kind of nerdy of me and sentimental, but I like that side of it where I see all the work that put in to make it to that point. I just really enjoy that aspect of it. I know how hard it is because I watch these guys, the work that they put in. So I love camp. I will say after the first preseason game and we go back to St. Joe, I'm about ready to get going with the season.
I think a lot of guys, once they go back, I'm dating myself here again, but I remember back in high school, you know, I played ball there. It's just, I remember going to William Jewell.
Yeah.
And I remember just the guys be hanging out there in the Maybe Center they had there. And, you know, Jaworski running around with his Wendy's or whatever. And Alfredo Roberts giving us, you know, the keys to his car to go get some cash because we had bought him a Miami hat because he loved the hat. And he went to Miami and they're like, it was just a different time of day. And, they, you know, just, and I remember River Falls going up there with my dad before I got in media and stuff and watching, you know, training camp up there. I've always kind of been a training camp guy. I kind of enjoy the value of that.
It's fun. It's fun. And also for fans that go up there, you get to be as close to the players as you're ever going to be. And you get to talk to them.
I always recommend that because people say, well, I can finally afford to go to the final preseason game. I was like, you know, go up to St. Joe. It's not going to cost you anything and you'll be right next to them.
And see the team get better. Just the big plays that happen and the moments of growth. If you love football, going up there and just seeing the team get a little bit better every single day is fun, and it pays off later in the year. You'll see plays in training camp that aren't pulled out until December 8th. It's like, I remember that from St. Joe, and it's a pretty cool thing.
Well, remember when Chip Kelly was with Philadelphia and they ran the swinging gate on like a two-point conversion? The Chiefs had actually practiced that back in training camp because they were thinking, you know, ahead of games, you know, forward, they actually had practiced that play, and I think they ended up stopping at that play at that point. I know it did rain up there a little bit.
Just a little.
But training camp always has its days. And I know that we've had stuff where the broadcast is knocked off and we've had to, you know, I've come up here to the studio to do it because Dusty's been up there or whatever in training camp and I've come up here. And then they move indoors. How many days were like that up there? Was there any at all?
We had zero indoor days this year.
So you didn't have to go up indoors at
all? Not a single day,
okay.
Which is crazy. I asked Mitch about it. He said in his, as far as he could remember, it was the first time ever there had been not a single indoor day. We really had great weather the whole time. A few days were pretty hot, but there was even some days that it sounds kind of ridiculous saying this, but it was actually kind of cold because it was cloudy and 60 degrees and windy.
And the weather was great. His practice in the morning, which is very helpful because his predecessors, they were in the afternoon.
Yeah. Every practice is at 9:15. It's bright and early. Sun isn't that high in the sky yet, but it was nuts not having a single rain out where they go inside because the indoor facility is great. Missouri Western really takes care of us, but you want to be outside. You want to be spread out, want to be out on grass. And we were lucky this year. Every single practice was outside on grass.
But you can get real close to the action though, when you're inside there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to have a head on a swivel.
Head on a swivel because you're just right there.
Yep. I mean, if you're not looking, you're going to get taken out if you're inside.
Matt, you bust your butt all year long with the Chiefs. Love the stuff you do with Mitch and huge fan of the franchise and all that. I think that's better than Hard Knocks, to be honest with you. I think it's been great, but I can't thank you enough. Take some time here. You get 13 days until opening day. So just enjoy yourself because hopefully you're still working until through February.
That's the idea. I appreciate you, Jay. Love
Thanks
the work
for coming
that you
in
do.
Here, man.
Love coming in. Could talk football with you for 8 more hours if we could. But I'll see you hopefully in a few weeks, and let's go do it again.
We'll talk about the team on the other side of the parking lot, the Kansas City Royals. Big game tonight against Philadelphia. Our insider, Josh Vernier, joins us next.